Hey everyone, welcome back to season 2 of Trail Culture. I'm your host, Em Robertson, and I'm so stoked that you're tuning in. It's been a minute and I am so excited to be back. The past few weeks have been filled with changes, great conversations, recording episodes for the next season, and overall just a great time to reflect and learn from the past year of bringing you Trail Culture episodes. There are some really special stories in the pipeline coming up for season 2, and I can't wait to share them with all of you. Before we get started, there is some exciting news that I am stoked to share. First off, season 2 of Trail Culture is fueled by Carbon Endurance. I am really stoked to have found people who love the podcast, understand trail culture, and who are making a real and meaningful contribution to the growth of the sport in South Africa. More on that later, but thank you to Carbon Endurance for partnering with Trail Culture. I am really looking forward to the season ahead. Second, I am climbing in the adventure van next week, and we'll be bringing you some special episodes from Otter Terex Trail presented by Easy Equities. I'm really excited to work with that team and bring you all some stories from the grail of trail, so keep an eye on our Instagram page for more information on that. And for now, we've got a great episode lined up to kick off season 2. Thank you all so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. Guys, welcome to another episode of Trail Culture. We are back with season 2. Very exciting. We all need a break from putting content out there every now and again. And this week, I'm really stoked to welcome a legend in the trail community who has let me into his house. A dad, an athlete, and just a lekker human, Petrus de Klerk. Petrus is a classic all-rounder, and he doesn't seem to run from hard things, but from what I've gathered, he just dives in head first and seems to keep trouble company. So from 100K laps around Table Mountain to the heat of the prom in February to the darkest nights featuring literal skeletons making their way around Table Mountain. This guy is a mountain legend. And yeah, I hope you guys all feel inspired listening to somebody who's got a role and a voice in shaping trail culture as we know it. So stoked to have you on the podcast, Beatrice. Cool. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And we've not only got Pietras, we've got another guest for those watching.
Chase the Deaf Dog.
Chase the Deaf Dog is here with us.
He'll sleep just now. Due for a nap.
Due for a nap. Chase is great. It's part of the trail culture. Pietras, to start off, we're keen to hear where it all began. This is always a lacquer question to just kick off. So yeah, give us a bit of background. How did you find yourself playing sport, getting into running? Where did it all start?
So I ran a little bit at school. My first memory of being okay-ish at something involving athletics was running an 800 meters at our inter-schools meeting, where I realized that I did quite well without really, putting in any training. My dad was an accomplished long distance, 800 meter and long distance runner. He has a PB of under 2 minutes for the 800, which is pretty fast.
Yeah, that's quite
fun. I mean, I'll never get close to that, I don't think. So I think it was always sort of in my periphery and in the genes and whatnot. And then I think I went through that thing where a lot of people go through in different phases at varsity, where you kind of, okay, I'm going to get fit, I'm going to do this, and I would start. I would run a 3K once a week or whatever. It wasn't really anything serious. And then in 2012, a friend of mine convinced me to run the Peninsula Half Marathon. Well, I'm guessing end of 2011 more. So the Peninsula Half Marathon in 2012, which normally happens at the beginning of the year, I think it's February or so, was the first race that I paid money for, got a number. And it was a memorable one. We ended up picking up, so I think my flatmate at the time took us to the start line. We picked up my friend, who was the one that convinced me to run, at around 4:30 that morning, smelling of tequila and basically felt like a tequila bomb had exploded in the car. We met the previous night to carbo load.
Yes.
Pizza, a little bit of wine, but then he went to a birthday party after, which was not going to get out of control, but then ended up getting out of control. So his race did not go as planned.
Okay, he wasn't sweating sodium, he was sweating tequila.
I think we pretty much said goodbye to each other within a kilometer, and then I managed to finish in a respectable sub 2 hour. I think it was 155, 157 something. Absolutely knackered. It was the hardest thing I'd done up to that point in time. But yeah, that was my introduction. And then I think it took me about another year or so of running before I started dabbling in some trails.
Nice.
And then same as I think a lot of people, we cut our teeth doing the Spur Summer Trail Series, which it was still called then, some of the shorter races, and then you try and do some slightly longer stuff. So progressing from like 7Ks to 10Ks and that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I was still doing mostly road running at that point in time.
Okay, nice.
But yeah, that was more or less, 2012, 2013. That was the start of my running journey.
Nice.
Call it that.
I think I said this to you when I walked in, but you are not only found in the mountains, and I've heard rumors of you running on the prom, but it was actually when I saw you pace at the Community Track Club in Stellenbosch. I think, was that at the start of this year? It was, flip, time flies. And then I was like, dang, like it's always great for me when like mountain people are fast. And then I was like, well, this guy's like really fast. And then as I was stalking you, I realized you have some crazy road times. Very respectable to Ocean's Half. Anyone who can run under 130 on that, that's like, that's miraculous stuff. But would you say you have like a favorite running space? I'm like, you kind of started on the road, but I feel like I'm not going to claim knowing you super well, but like I see you as like a mountain athlete more. But yeah, favorite running space, or is running just running?
It's hard. I mean, the last 2 years I've definitely spent much more time on the road than I have on the mountain. If you look at, I think, both cumulative time and kilometers. But that's mainly just, it's just what is easiest for me to do. So how my day normally works is I'm in the fortunate position where my job, my hours are pretty flexible. So my time is 99% my own. And with having a toddler at home, you need to do school runs and fit everything in around that and think about what your partner needs by the time they get home, because my wife works different hours and different structure to me. So for me, it's normally the easiest to just go for a run in the middle of the day. So I'll take kind of a break, have a lunchtime or whatever.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's a lot more accessible and easier to run on the road, because you can get much more done in, say, an hour or whatever. And you can start at your front door, and you can, if you know you're going to be out for an hour, you know you're going to be back at your front door an hour later. It's not like you have to drive to a trailhead, do this and this and that. So it's a... I do enjoy running on the road, but it's more a product of necessity almost than anything else. But I have been doing a lot of road running the last 2 years, and it is fun. But the mountain is still where I feel I'm digressing, but I think the mountain is a space where when you're running there are certain things that you can't get from running on the road.
For sure, yeah.
It's that thing of solitude, being on your own, very close to nature. Without sounding all hippie-go-lucky about it. I love both.
And I mean, something you've made a passing comment now, like the road will expose any weakness you had. We were chatting about in the setup, it took me forever to set up because the chats were to lacquer. But we were talking about like carbon shoes and spending time like on the road, just like running with kind of carbon plates in the shoes. And you mentioned, the road will expose a weakness. I think both types of running are hard. So like what is it about the road that keeps you coming back?
I mean, I'm a guy that likes Excel spreadsheets and lists and numbers and things. And the road is just, it's simple. If you know what somebody's half marathon PB is, you know exactly how fast they are, or a 5K PB or whatever. And it's something that it is 100% about pacing, and there aren't really many variables to it. I mean,
yeah,
you can run fast. Well, if somebody tells you, okay, cool, my 5K PB is 18 minutes, then you know, okay, cool, that is a fast person. If you are running in the mountain, I mean, everything is a variable. So we're going out for 20Ks today. It might be a 3-hour run. It might be a 4-5, whatever hour run. The road is just,
It's predictable in a way. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's something tangible that you can see. You can literally see the improvement. It's in black and white. There's no hiding from it.
The work that you put in, you hope you are, I want to say, more likely to get out, because sometimes you don't for whatever reason. But yeah, the trail, I feel like, as you said, the variables mean that more often than not, you've put in loads of work and then you still get nothing out.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's harder to measure. I mean, I like the fact that if you go for a 5K, say you run a 5K time trial today, and you go run another 5K time trial on the same route, whatever, 4, 6, 8 weeks from now, and you can 100% compare the two, like for like, maybe small things like wind or weather or whatever, but I mean, you know exactly where you are.
Yeah.
And I like that. I mean, I like being able to return to the same half marathon, for instance, year after year, and see improvements, or see where you are at in terms of where you were 10 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't run any road races for about, I think, 2 or 3 years, somewhere between 2019 and 2021. And then last year, I was training for UTCT, the 100K, and I was still getting coached, and I was working on we kind of figured out a plan where I could spend a lot of time running on the road and still get those long day benefits. So I started tracking my road running a lot more again.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite things now is a little spreadsheet where I've got every single half marathon I've run since 2012, and I've got every single time that I ran, and I've got a list of the fastest, the slowest, the average. It makes me very happy to be able to see that.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's I think nerding out a bit, which is a lot of what road running is about as well. But yeah,
and with the, I mean, it's really cool that you've got over 10 years worth of data to look at. Like, 2012 was kind of the first half.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, do you still have kind of goals left on the, say, half marathons or marathons that you've done? Is there something specific that you're stoked
100%.
About? Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to get to a point where my kind of short-term goal is to go back and run every half marathon I've ever run in sub 90. So there's a couple left on the list there that I have to do. And then this year I had a big goal to run a PB at Ocean's Half, which I managed, which I was very happy with. And then I have although my time is running out to do this in, because you get slower, slower and slower as you get older. I very much would like to shoot for a sub-3 marathon at some point in time. I've only ever run, I think, 3 road marathons, and all three were just to get a qualifier for Oceans Ultra.
Okay.
So I haven't really I've never really trained properly to try and run a fast marathon, but I know, I mean, from personal experiences of close friends who are significantly faster than I am, there's a huge difference between running a sub 90 half and running 2 of them back.
Yeah.
And then, not even to speak of, I mean, that's maybe even a bigger goal to consider at some point in the future is something like a silver at Oceans.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at the work that Stu, that everybody knows, the amount of work that he put in and his race on the day, and it was quite cool to follow. But I mean, that is something that is, yeah, that is, call it, I think if you run a sub 90 half, the numbers are, you will be somewhere in the top, I think 1-3% of the field, depending on what race you're running. But going silver at Oceans is even, it's about 50% faster than that still. You're literally the 1%.
That 1% right at the top, yeah.
And then, of course, the difference between that and the guys that we watch on TV that are really fast is even...
It's next level. Yeah. And then I think of taking what you do at Oceans and sustaining it for another 30Ks and watching the comrades, front runners come
exactly,
in.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, yeah. There's something about the road that's deep.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. We're excited for the future road goals.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm throwing you in the deep end. We warm up to the more philosophical chats. For you, I'm throwing you straight in the deep end of the pool. And before we get into the mountain men, and this stuff is all kind of linked, so if it comes in, then that's great. But I feel like the mountain men were into trail running before it was a thing. I did a deep dive back. I was stalking everyone. For those mountain men and women watching, I feel like I know all of you. Comments on growth of the sport. I mean, we're seeing year on year, when I look at, I went back and to use kind of Kloof Corner as an example at UTCT. I mean, that's, you guys are famed for bringing the Gears to that space every year, pitching up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Someone's going to give you an ice cold beer and you're going to scream until you lose your voice for the runners coming up the corner. And I mean, looking at those original photos of the group that gathered there to watch the runners come through. So twofold, one, looking at the amount of people who gathered, and two, the amount of runners passing through. I want to say it's 5 times plus bigger. Like if you go and look now, the most recent UTCT picture, there's not a piece of Table Mountain that I can see. It's just bodies making a tunnel. Yeah. And obviously there's a lot more people taking on the longer distances. So thoughts on that, growth of the sport, talk to us.
So I think, I always tell people by far my favorite event on the calendar is UTCT. And UTCT is, it's almost where we chatted about, or well, went off on a tangent a little bit about the road and things being very measurable. UTCT to me is it's a good way to measure where trail running is at.
Yeah.
So my first foray into, let's call it proper ultra distance running, was UTCT back in 2016. I think 15 was their first year. I missed that. 16, I ran the 65 with a friend of mine. And if you look at then versus now, I mean, it's chalk and cheese. It's something completely different. But it's something that's been building up over time. And I think the end goal was always to kind of get where it is now. And I had an interesting chat to somebody on the mountain the other day who's very involved in UTCT, and they said, and it's been the same thing for the last 3 or 4 years. I said, if you think last year was good, you're going to see. So, yeah, very excited to see where that's going. But it's definitely, I mean, trail culture, if you want to call it that, has grown immensely. Things like Kloof Corner, I mean, we can maybe take a little bit of... it's going to sound wrong. We can maybe take a little bit of credit for that. And it's something that we specifically wanted to start and. But I mean, the last 2 years with the guys at Jack Black and UTCT making a big thing of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of just grown to that thing where it's not, I don't think it's a mountain men thing anymore. I mean, we'll get tagged in a post in the weeks leading up to it and whatnot. But it's something that has been, I think we originally wanted to have it, that feel that you see, well, there's Agama photos where you've literally got people. We thought that, that's where we want to be at. And so I mean, if you take Kloof Corner as a smaller microcosm of UTCT, then I think it's clear to anyone that the culture is growing and has grown. And if you look at the amount of internationals that come, and more importantly, the amount of internationals that come back.
Very cool.
Because I think... it's very easy to go and run a race, but it tells you something if you're willing to go back year after year after year. And
yeah.
if you can get proper professional paid elite athletes to come back year after year after year. And
yeah.
I mean, from the first year that we had internationals here, hearing a lot of them say that it's one of the best experiences they've had at a race.
Yeah.
One of the most technical runs they've
yes.
had. I remember Devin Yanko back in 2018-19 in her race recap, basically, where she said she was crying in and out of most aid stations, but she still had an incredible day and it
yeah.
was so special. Yeah. So, and I mean, the event's obviously grown from being, there was a 65 and a 100K the first year, where there's now something for everybody. And it's not only a whole weekend, it's a whole week, effectively.
Yeah, there's loads.
Yeah, so I think trail culture is in a healthy space. We were, I guess a lot of us kind of got in at the basement level, if you could call it that. And I mean, when we started the Mountain Men, we didn't even know what we were doing, really. It was just a bunch of friends that kind of ran together. It was a WhatsApp group that got out of control, effectively.
Okay, nice. So you guys are the epitome. Like Kloof Corner is like the plan made it out of the group chat. Like,
kind of, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, I think so. Yeah. And I mean, it's nice. We get a lot of support from the guys like Jack Black and Stu and them. And then every now and again, somebody comes up with a good idea of how we can give something back. But yeah. Cliff Corner is literally just something that we look forward to every year. And there's like a whole lot of planning that goes into it every year. And I mean, we made the cowbells a thing the first year. One of the members specifically, Andre, came up with the idea and he bought a bunch of cowbells from a charity organization and
really
got
cool.
them painted in but tiny little ones. But that was kind of the start of the cowbell thing.
And yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, for the last 2 years, I think R&B have been handing out branded cowbells because that's what people do and want. Exactly. So
I've been trying hard to separate it, but I'm like, let's just get into it. But who are the original Mountain Men? I don't know. I'm like, and I don't mean to, I'm just painting a picture, people. I'm not trying to be like who started what, but I mean, you said it was a WhatsApp group that got out of control. So I assume it's like, from the outside, I'm like, it sounds like it was a bunch of friends who were trying to organize, like maybe to go for long runs together, meet for a beer afterwards, and then it's grown.
Yeah. So we were basically, I think originally we were kind of four or five, maybe 10 guys that we all knew through various different contacts in and around Cape Town that were all interested in running and more specifically running trails. And then it's just an easy way to, and we all lived in fairly close proximity to each other. Most of us were based in Frederick, so quite close to the mountain. And my first trail run was literally like a little 4K loop where you start and end at the quarry.
Oh, nice.
That I think a lot of people still know. We still have a little segment there that one of the guys is very proud of his personal best, of him being the king of that little segment, little Daniel technical running section. But yeah, that's effectively what we had. It was a WhatsApp group where you can quickly shoot a message and see who's available for a run. And then it kind of grew from there. And in the beginning, I mean, I think we had a total of about 25 kind of revolving members at the moment, because every now and again somebody taps out because they need a mental health break and the group can be a little bit much. And then they'll tap back in when they feel like it again. But I mean, there was a bunch of people involved in the beginning. It was just kind of like, you'll see a buddy at the gym and he tells you that he just bought a pair of trail shoes. And you're like, well, we've a bunch of guys that run together. Just come and hop in.
Yeah,
that's
so cool.
Yeah. But I mean, I think the guys that wanted to be there are the guys that kind of stayed. And then it just kind of grew over time where you'll meet somebody nice. And then, I mean, there's no formal process technically for becoming a member of the Mountain Men per se, but it would kind of be that natural grow of you'd have a buddy that runs with you every now and again, and then that buddy would run with maybe go on a long run with some other guys in the group, and then kind of after a while somebody goes, maybe it's a good idea to ask this person if he wants to be part of something that they might regret later on, I don't know. And then it kind of started becoming what it is. We started planning some annual events that some of them happen annually, some don't necessarily. And we have a very formal, informal AGM once a year, normally in December. The first one, literally, I think we almost got kicked out of a pizza restaurant in Frederick because things got very heated. I think there were discussions about logos and colors on logos and t-shirts and whatever, and lots of beer drinking involved, and people who are normally very good friends got very angry at each other. It's kind of just this, almost I want to call it this thing that it's evolved kind of naturally. And
is that AGM now your guys' beer mile?
We'll schedule it around that time of the year.
Okay.
So the beer mile is the one kind of constant that we've had as a constant for the last, I think, 3 or 4 years counting, which is quite a lot. The official date for the beer mile is the weekend after UTCT.
Yes.
We'll run it on the same field that UTCT happened at on the Saturday. We've so far managed to connive, trick, bribe a couple of elites who are around Cape Town at that time to participate. I think the first elite that participated was Paddy O'Leary he came first or second on the day, ran in his Irish what's a sport called, lacrosse kit.
Oh yeah.
And he is a formidable beer miler.
Nice.
That was the same year I'm now completely trailing off, but we ran the Tuesday trails leading into UTCT, and two of us were chatting about our beer mile.
Yeah.
And a guy piped up behind us in what I thought was an American accent, but it ended up being a Canadian. He's like, I hear you guys are talking about a beer mile. And we're like, yeah. He's like, well, funny enough, I'm part of the Canadian beer mile, Canadian national beer mile team.
No
we're
ways.
Like, bullshit, man, whatever. And so there's this young guy, Gabe Gilioni, who I think was working for, he was employed by Reebok. They did this, what was he even called? Like, effectively, what he did was he was getting paid by Reebok to go all around the world, and they would put on these night run events where you effectively run with glow sticks and things and boom boxes, and then you run.
Is this the Midnight Runners? Is that what it's called? Was that a different Canadian?
No,
who was here?
That's them.
It's the guy. Literally, I saw this man. He ran like the 100K.
Yes.
He was broken.
He ran the 100K in sub 14 hours. It was the furthest he'd run. I think the previous furthest he'd run was him and a friend drunkenly deciding to run across Tajikistan.
No ways.
But it was the ignorance of youth, I thought. Yeah. So he participated in the beer mile, and that was the first year we had an international there with him. He ended up, unfortunately, vomiting, which is an automatic disqualification in the sense that you have to run an extra lap, so he didn't win.
Oh, my word.
But we realized there's a big difference between being a beer miler and being somebody that runs a beer mile. That was the first year we had an international year. Yeah.
This is so random. That guy, I saw him. Who was I? I was coming, one of the elites, and I was at the UCT aid station. And it was like post, you know, you at the aid station, the elites come through, everybody's like in awe of how quickly they do it, whatever. And I was still there. And I'd seen this guy, and he had like Canadian stuff on.
Yeah.
And then that was still the time where, like, now if you see an international person, it's like, whatever. But then I was like, what? There's like a Canadian here? That's cool. Anyway, and this guy, he ran in super strong. I was like, he's, you know, the 14-hour, like, mark. And then it was so hot. Yeah. And he was like, I'm dying, I'm broken. And I was like, bro, you're so close. And then he asked me, how bad is the Blockhouse Climb? And I lied through my teeth.
Everybody
lied. I
don't
even know if you'll remember this. I was just like, you're almost there, bro. Everybody like, lies. It's fine. So anyway,
everybody that's lies about the Blockhouse Climb. There's no other way to do it.
Oh my gosh, that's great. Okay. So Mountain Men, it started. You guys made it out of the group chat. Tell me a bit about some of the personalities that can be found. I'm like, I've heard a couple of names. I've met some of you. Other people will know different faces. The girls also taking over and bringing, they brought baby girl Evie into the world. And I mean, Nick and Aaron are great. And yeah, there's people who are like known and some who are lesser known, but are still core. So tell us who would one find if we had to bump into the mountain?
Well, I mean, it's a bunch of different people and different personalities. Or super extroverted, super introverted guys from many different industries. I mean, or entrepreneurs, guys who are into big finance jobs, guys who specialize in economics, guys who do come from a marketing background. We have a neurologist in there somehow. Our photographers on the group, teachers, we have a running coach. Guys who are professional psychologists. And everybody kind of brings their own little bit and part to the group. I think it's one of those where maybe to use a running analogy, when we were four guys that ran 13 Peaks the year that COVID hit, when a bunch of us were training for UTCT, that then obviously didn't happen. So we were like, okay, cool. Instead of doing UTCT as a 100K, why don't we go and run 13 Peaks so that we've got something to do with all of this mountain fitness?
Yeah.
And during that whole experience, you go through phases where different people bring different parts to your collective package to make sure that all of you make it. And I think that's a lot of what the mountain men are. Everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses, and they're part of a conversation or a relationship that they bring into the party. And the right people shut up at the right times most of the time, and the right people speak up at the right time. And especially if we start discussing things can get out of hand very quickly. But I feel like there are always enough of the right type of people who can kind of center the whole conversation.
Yeah.
Kind of bring some perspective to it. It's really I call it a ragtag bunch of people with a shared mutual love of running and the running community and what it brings. And I mean, there are guys that haven't run further than 10 or 15 Ks, and there are guys that have run 100 milers, multiple 100 milers.
Yeah. I love that it's like the one thing you have in common almost is the love of the mountains and the trails. It's like you would probably never find all of those people in the same room with the same like cause or purpose again, but then there's this like one thing that brings you all together, which I think is great. Yeah. And running, we had like a small conversation about this earlier, but like hanging out with people who don't look and think like you is a really good thing.
100%.
If you're going to surround yourself, you could very easily also in this space surround yourself with people who do things all the same way, train the same way, think the same way. It's easy. And 100%. I really dig that you guys are like very different. It's like a family. Everyone's got a different role, different thing. It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's evolved into, I mean, I've met people via other people in the group who have become part of the group that I wouldn't have met otherwise and who have become really, really good friends.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of, again, I think it's that natural, the way things have kind of just naturally progressed. But everybody obviously has that shared love. I mean, now in the Olympics, for instance, the Mountain Men WhatsApp group evolved into something totally different.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, all of us are track and field experts.
Fanatics.
And yeah.
It's like, guys, that technique for the pole vaults. I've been studying this my whole life. And
yeah.
No, that's epic. I think, okay, so I'm always bad at this. I jump in and I assume people know what I'm talking about. But as per the Mountain Men definition on the Instagram handle, it's the Mountain Men are a motley crew of friends in Cape Town who share a love for mountains, banter and brewskis in no particular order. So I love that. That's great. You guys can go and check it out. But one of the things we've mentioned or alluded to is like there's annual events that happen. Some people come with crazy ideas of doing things. And that's like another thing that I love. I feel like that's how I heard about the Mountain Men for the first time was I think it was actually the Dead Man's Backyard.
Oh, the Progression. Ultra,
the Progression. Dead Man's Progression was one.
Yeah.
We're going to get into that and the 6-6 now. But please, as per all the traditions, tell us, what is the Porky Cup? I did my best. It was mentioned in a couple of posts and I was like, I can't actually find what this is. I think I have an idea, but please do share.
So the Porky, I can't even remember how we dreamt and who dreamt this up. It's effectively a floating trophy that is only applicable to a race where 4 or more Mountain Men participate.
Okay. Some good old so that family rivalry.
Exactly.
Love it.
Exactly. So I think I can't remember who bought the original Porky, but it's an old pewter beer mug that is inscribed with something. It's some squadron, flying squadron, whatever, but they dedicated this to their friend Porky. That's where the Porky name comes from.
So that's a shoe. You guys don't know Porky. It's just on the
absolutely
on the beer.
No idea who Porky is.
Porky does not know
we love,
that Porky
we love
has...
him or her regardless. So the idea is that any race that 4 more Mountain Men participate in, the first person to cross the finish line wins the Porky, and they are the holder of the Porky Cup for however long
until
the next one happens. And then as things evolve, if you're the holder of the Porky, somebody will maybe add something to it, so tie a little ribbon or whatever. And then at some point in time, I think Dirk thought up the idea of having a reverse Porky. So whenever there's a Porky, there's not also a Poiky. And the Poiky is the Poiky because Dirk bought a super expensive, he didn't realize he was buying, I think, a silver teapot that he saw in some random secondhand shop at some point. So whenever there's a Porky, the person who finishes last then gets the Poiky.
Oh, that's
as
cute.
A consolation prize. I'm not even sure where the Poiky is at the moment. And the Porky is currently with a member who has taken a bit of a break, who has been the holder of the Porky since the beer mile. So that shows you we've been very lackadaisical this year. But the next Porky will be 6-6 that you mentioned. So that'll be, we've gone through, I mean, everybody's been through, there's been a bunch of people that have been injured and whatnot. But I just think there hasn't been a race where there have been enough people this year that I've participated to call it a Porky. So,
sure. Okay. So
yeah. So 6-6 in September will be a Porky and a Poiky.
Lekker.
We'll have a...
And 6-6, tell us about that. I think I've seen it beautifully captured, written about, the washing line with the cards. There's just, I'm like, it feels like every time I already think you guys are cool and then something happens and I'm like, damn it, that's so cool. And like, if anyone else tried, it just wouldn't be as cool. So... Yeah, 6-6.
I think we did the first one in 2019. The idea was to run a backyard ultra. So for those unfamiliar with the premise, it's effectively you run laps until there's one person standing. Ours, we kind of tweaked a bit. We said we'll run laps for X amount of hours. So 6-6, we start at 6 a.m. and finish at 6 a.m. You have 1 hour to finish your lap. It's basically 2 separate loops starting more or less at the Kramat on Signal Hill.
Okay.
Or just past it at that little parking lot. And then we do loops of Lion's Head. There's a short steep loop and a slightly flatter longer loop. And we do them in different directions. So there's effectively 4 different loops. And there's a specific order they get run in. And you have an hour to finish your loop. And if you can't finish your loop in the hour,
you get cut.
You get cut. Or if you decide to stop, you get cut, whatever. First year, we had 0 finishes. We ran it in September and it was way too hot.
Yeah.
Johan van den Nest got to lap 10 or 11, I think, and then tapped out. But it was hectic. And then the next year, we moved it to slightly. Sorry, we ran in October that year. Then the year after that, we moved it to September, where it was slightly cooler and everybody had learned, I think, a bit from the year before.
Yes.
And we had our first official finishes. And then 2020, we ran, that was the COVID year.
Yeah, like it.
Oh, sorry. 2020 was the second year. That's the first year we had official finishes. We're going off on the rails again. But yeah, effectively, it's simple. We start at 6 a.m. in the morning. There's all these little traditions and things that go with it. But effectively, you pick a card from a normal pack of playing cards when you start your loop. And then somewhere on the route, there are two spots depending on what loop you're running on. There's a box with cards. You have to find your matching card. It's kind of like the pages of the book.
Yes, with Barclays, of course. So cool.
And then our cards are hung on a kind of like a makeshift washing line to kind of look like what they do at Barclays, where they hang the car registration plates on. And then you have to come back and match your card that you found out on the loop to your card that you left at the start.
Yep.
If you don't match it, you have a choice of either running a heel repeat or drinking a lukewarm shot of potency. Do not know where that came from. But we effectively still have the same bottle of potency we started with in 2019.
Oh, so it's no. Probably a myth. Yeah.
Yeah, and then at the end of the day, the last person standing or the first person back on loop 12 is the winner. But it's cool. It's an incredible day. It's honestly the one day where every single day we run it, every single time we've run it so far, there's somebody that runs further than they've ever gone before.
Yeah.
Or longer than they've ever gone before. Or longer than they thought they would in their current state of fitness or injured piece of S-ness they are in. And it's a rad event. And the last couple of years, we've kind of pulled in people from the rest of the community as well. So the rule at the moment is everybody gets a plus one to this event.
Cool.
So you can invite somebody that you think is would enjoy it or don't want to say is worthy of an entry. But it's just a way to get more people there and involved in the vibe.
That's really cool. I like there's like an openness to it, but it's not like a whole own thing where just anyone. Really cool.
Yeah.
And okay, 6 to 6 is great, Porky. We've got the one thing I literally don't know why I found it so funny. Maybe it was a be there moment, but I wanted to pick like one story and I struggled to choose, but Skelly Bonnets at the 13 Peaks, like
Skelly Bonnet
and the requirements, like just take us through the thing about basically running fast and don't die. It just sent me. I was like laughing.
Yeah, so in 2019, I think, was the year that 13 Peaks became a thing. And obviously everybody, if you're familiar with the trail running community or the trail running in Cape Town at large, that's a route that Ryan Sands and Kane Riley put together. Effectively, you start and finish at Signal Hill and you take 13 Peaks, you basically turn around at Chapman's Peak and you tag 13 iconic peaks on a route of about 105-odd kilometers, depending on how many detours and shortcuts you can take. And we decided, obviously, well, it was the brainchild of our supreme leader, Andre, decided that maybe we should attempt this as a relay. Obviously, get as many of us involved as possible, as everybody doesn't have the ability or didn't have the ability then, still not now, to run 100 kilometers.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, why don't we do this as a team? So we kind of, I looked at the spreadsheet yesterday. It was quite the process. Obviously there's a lot of logistics involved in doing handovers and whatnot, because it's not like it's a route that every single peak is accessible just via a car, for instance.
Yes.
And you have to time things really nicely. But the idea was that we'll run it in legs, at least two guys to a leg, so that you've got safety and numbers. And then we do handovers. Some of us ran, I think, two or so legs during the course of the day. But we started early on Signal Hill, Lion's Head, first one to tag, and then myself and Nicholas took the platter clip to we tagged Plattenklip and we had to do a handover at Kasteelspoort. So that was one of the hardest logistical things, because now you have to balance everybody's expected times with actual times and where you're going to meet each other. And somebody needs to take car keys so they can take to the next point. But anyways, we somehow managed to get all of this done. And I think we ended up running at 16, just under 17 hours.
Yo.
Which, when you look at what the really fast guys do, it's still not that fast. But it was incredible. And Skelly is a literal plastic skeleton that was kind of the baton, if you could call it that. So Skelly had his own, I think it was Andre's extra blue Sunto that we hooked on for Skelly. And the idea was obviously that we'd have one continuous Strava, run to put on Strava. So when you tagged your peak, you had to take a photo of Skelly at the peak. And then at the handover, you hand over Skelly and Skelly's watch.
Yeah.
And so during the course of the day, I think somebody was playing around on socials and people kind of got aware. I think Ryan Sands actually ended up DMing us and saying, oh, what a cool idea this was. And some other people got slightly upset because we were running it in a relay, so it's not the way it's supposed to be and wada. But anyways, it was a lot of fun. And it's kind of just one of those things that we actually chatted about it yesterday, because I asked the guys about, I was too lazy to go and look for times and what. I was like, what is the time we did this in? And then one of the guys started sharing photos of the day again, and we realized it was so much fun. We must actually just, we're seriously thinking of doing it again, but yeah, it was rad.
And Skelly Bonnet, any relation to Remy Bonnet?
That's just weird. That's a play on the name. But yeah.
But that, I think I love this. I saw this and I was like, this is you guys have a cool combination of like serious and fun going down. So it's like, we're not all ready to run 13 peaks, or maybe some of us are, but let's just do a relay. People can do what they can do. I don't know how you decided who would go with pairs, but you've got a buddy, you have to carry the skeleton, but it's just a great like check for running can be serious, but it can also just be
100%.
a good time.
100%. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a very, very fun day. It ended up being quite a late day. But it was cool. And I mean, like I said, it made something like 13 Peaks accessible to a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have. I mean, literally the guys that ran the first leg, the Lion's Head leg, one of the guys that went up had never been to the top of Lion's Head before.
No way.
And he wouldn't have done it otherwise. It was quite treacherous conditions on the day. I mean, it was dark and very misty and, but they managed it, and it was kind of outside his comfort zone, but I mean, easily enough within his comfort zone that he could still be a part of it and participate.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
So it was quite cool. So we'll definitely, I think, we are for sure playing with the idea of doing it again and maybe
giving it a
proper go. Maybe go for that.
All I want to do is put a DJI mic on Skelly and capture the between point banter.
We can definitely talk about it.
Imagine. Oh, my word. It's great. And I'm like, there's so much cool stuff, and I'm using my notes here, but I mean, you guys were doing trail culture group stuff, making things accessible, all these things, which now like it feels like people share, and it's like as if it's a novel thing. And I'm like, you guys have been doing it for a while. But something I dig is that you mentioned it briefly earlier, is that you guys still support local initiatives, giving back to the trails, like using your community and like kind of the voice that you have for good, if I can say it like that, which is awesome. And I mean, you mentioned the cowbell. You guys got like a local guy to make the cowbells for the first Kloof Corner, which is so cool. But I mean, was it always the way you guys wanted to do things? Like as it grew, like we want to make a concerted effort, or is it just you guys are lack of humans who want to maintain the trails?
I mean, I think it's something that you kind of, if you part of the larger trail community in Cape Town, it's kind of almost something that I feel you have to do, whether it be by paying for a race entry where a part of that entry goes to maintaining trails or making a conscientious effort. Like Christian came up with the idea last year or the year before that we should, I think it was last year, where I know Stu and them from UTCT were effectively upgrading a lot of the sections on the mountain that were in disrepair, specifically sections that UTCT has run on, but it makes total sense. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
And then they had an initiative where you can chip in. There was, for instance, I can't even remember what the amount was. It wasn't something silly, but he said effectively the Trail Angels cost, call it $1,000 or $2,000 for the day, and in a day they can fix Kloof Corner because Kloof Corner needs fixing. And we were like, well, we can easily, between the 25 of us, everybody chips in a little bit, and then we can kind of pay for that and pay it forward in that way, and then make better for everybody. I mean, they've been doing amazing work. I think we it's not, it's something that I feel just, it kind of happens. We all do feel a responsibility. I mean, as much as a lot of trail runners don't agree and do not like mountain bikers, for instance, the mountain bike community as a whole do so much in terms of trail maintenance for the trails that they go on. I think a lot of us trail runners can learn a bit from that. We are the first to complain when the boardwalks on the top of the mountain are broken and rusted and falling apart and burnt to bits, but then do something about it. And that's an easy way to do something about it. I mean, there's a snap scan for it. You just want your phone and pay two or three coffees worth of cash and there you go, and everybody wins. And then we'll obviously there's a guys like the guys at Jack Black who do the shoe drives, and try and do that because everybody's got a pair of shoes lying around that they can donate. And
I've been saving shoes for this year. Jack Black's not gonna know. I'm just gonna drop off. And all that stuff, that's starting soon. So this is a plug. That old pair of shoes, don't chuck it away or whatever. Just give it a little spot, and Jack Black's gonna start with that shoe drive. UTCT's around the corner, as you guys like to say. Christmas is around the corner. Something, this is actually a quote that I took, and this is segueing back into kind of running and the road keeping you honest. And now I suppose this is the trail version of this. But one of the quotes, and I don't know who writes all the mountain men posts, gotta love it. And they've got a great sense of humor if it is the same person. But one of the posts, and I think this was on your Blockhouse Invitational. But you look nervous. But it says, you're out there on your own steam, but you're amongst your tribe while you do it. And for me, I was like, I love that. Like, own steam, own effort, but you're amongst people. I'm hearing a lot of like people working towards individual goals, but as a group. And just thoughts on like one of the taglines, if I can say that, that's coming out of places like Western States and things, is that trail running is a team sport. 100%. That's like a new thing, or a newish thing that's come out. And then, but thoughts on like the trail running as a team sport versus, or not versus, and then in the contrast of like the individual battles that are fought, say it's between aid stations or in those stretches where you're going solo in racing or training.
Yeah. So, I mean, nobody can run 100 kilometers without a backup team. That's, I think, impossible. I mean, we, again, I'll go back to UTCD because it's just easy to use as an example. Every year there are different guys that run, different guys, different goals, different people that run the different distances. All of them will have support, whether it be if somebody's running the 55, the BT on the Friday, they might not be some of us at aid stations, but this year last year, there was a bunch of us at the finish when our first mountain men mate came in, for instance. On the Saturday, there are always people who are willing to drop everything else to crew somebody on the Saturday, whether they need them at one aid station, at every single aid station, whether they need somebody to run with them for the dark side of the 100 miler in the deep south. There are always people willing to do that. Obviously, always people willing to support at Kloof Corner and drink beers from 6 a.m. or whatever. I think we're all very supportive also in terms of things leading up to a race. So you might not be physically there to support somebody, but everybody's always got everybody else's back, and they'll give them a word of encouragement and a, but yeah. And I mean, I think that's, that helps you through those, like you said, in between aid station solo parts where things get a bit dark and difficult sometimes. It helps if you know that you're going to see a familiar or a smiling face.
And yeah.
Like I remember 2 years ago, I wasn't running UTCT. I was, I volunteered to sweep the last section of the Milo on the Sunday morning. So I spent a lot of time on the Saturday following two of our members that were running, and seeing how broken both of them were coming into Out Bay, and then spending some time there with a couple of us and wives, partners, friends, whatever, family, seeing how much better they looked going out of Out Bay, for instance, that just solidifies that sort of, yeah, that idea of just making it effectively from point A to point B, knowing somebody's going to be at point B. So
yeah,
the section between A and B might suck, but there's a little bit of a reward at the end of it.
Yeah. So, yeah. And those moments of like, you talking someone off a ledge, the ledge being like stopping or giving up, where, and sometimes you don't even know how close that person is to that ledge. And then just that like face or that word of encouragement, or like I saw something so cool last year where there was a guy came through an aid station and you could see he's like going through the most, and international like guy as well. I think his English wasn't great. And then I just saw him like pull out his phone at an aid station, and I literally thought he's going to like scan himself out. He's giving up. And then whoever it was, he jumped onto a FaceTime call. And obviously wherever his usual crew was in the world are like screaming and like cheering him on. And he's emotional, put his phone away, grabbed a potato and like kind of death marched out of the aid station. I was like, it brought me to tears almost. I'm like, the support is so real.
Yeah. I think it also helps if you've got somebody that's been there before who knows what type of tough love or not so tough love you need at certain points. And sometimes I remember that year, Dirk came into Heart Bay and he was crushed, and he was sitting there, everything was dirty. He wasn't happy, and he was just like, oh, he's got to go through this and whatever. And then somebody just decided to buy him, I think, a packet of knickknacks, something stupid. And he was struggling to eat and keep things down. And then he ate this packet of knickknacks. He's like, oh, I feel like $1 million now. Now I can go again.
No way.
And it's sometimes just something as arbitrary or stupid or silly as that. But yeah, we definitely, all of us are there to support everybody else. You'll even get a message of encouragement, even if you're only going to be running a 21K on the road the next day.
Yeah, that's so cool.
We've got each other's backs, I feel.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, for instance, I remember in COVID, the group could at sometimes, things got very, could get very toxic, because I think a lot of people were in bad head spaces.
Yeah.
But the group also, when it was needed, somebody would step up and really, say something or check in maybe with a DM or whatever. There was a lot of, the group, it served a very good purpose.
Yeah.
And still serves a very good purpose at some of those points.
Like beyond running sometimes. Yeah, just that exactly. the life, like there's exactly. a human behind the racing exactly. and the aid stations. It's like that, those greats, like, are you okay? Like,
exactly.
At a human level first. Yeah. That's
just awesome. A little reply privately. are you okay? Do we need to call somebody?
That's epic. Yeah. And I mean, we've mentioned now, like, there's from UTCT, the Beer Mile, Porky Cup, there's lots going on, but where can we expect to see the Mountain Men next? What's is 6 to 6 it?
Six is to six anything else is the next event. Our next official event, it'll be a Porky. I mean, there's no way we won't have enough people to start at least one loop. That's on the 21st of September.
Nice.
So close, around the corner effectively. Yes, this year we've been bad. We didn't do our Devil's 10, which we started last year. We didn't do a Dead Man's Progression. it's all of this is due to a lot of different things, but 66 will happen.
Nice.
And then we'll be in full force at UTCT. I don't think at the moment anybody, the next race coming up is Puffer, but everybody that was going to run it, I think, are injured at the moment.
Oi, Cape Town, winter.
Three Peaks, I don't think anybody's participating in this year. I'm potentially playing with the idea, but I don't know. We'll have to see. And then we'll be in full force at UTCT and then the Beer Mile the weekend after UTCT.
I love that it happens on the same field. It's like a week ago to this date at this place, there was this trail festival and the broken sleep deprived bodies, whether you were crewing or racing, come together to run this Beer Mile.
Yeah, it's funny. The first year we ran the Beer Mile, somehow the people that run that little sports complex completely forgot that there was a cricket match scheduled to happen exactly at the same time that we were running Beer Mile. So I remember we got a photo from, I think it was Joe that arrived first. He's like, we have a slight problem here. So I think we ended up starting an hour and a half or 2 hours later or whatever. It is quite a vibe, and it is a very much a, it's two opposite ends of the coin almost, if you could call it that.
I love it.
And the BMR is an absolute, it's a demokarspel. It's a show. It's funny how you forget how hard it is to run a BML if you haven't run it in a while. I mean, I'm absolutely terrible at it. I'm pretty much dead.
For those who really don't know what a BML is, it's like you need to down a beer, finish it.
Yeah.
And then you start running your lap.
So a mile obviously being effectively 1.6 kilometers. So it's four laps of a traditional 400 meter track. You have a zone that you have to drink your beer in. So you unscrew your beer, drink your beer. As soon as your beer is done, you can go for your lap. And then before you can start a lap, you need to down another beer. So it's effectively running 1.6 Ks while drinking four beers, which doesn't sound that hard. But after beer two, things become progressively harder.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, obviously, also, the slower you are, the more the alcohol
has time to take an effect.
I think the world record for the beer mile is still something like sub 4:30. So it's top level collegiate athletes who can run sub 4 minute miles, but also drink beer very fast.
The good old days. But and also I'm like, their strategy is like, let me burn it and use it before it can hurt me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, the guys that come in at the back of the field do it in about an hour. So by then things are very raucous and messy. But it's fun. It's good fun.
I think it's a great post, a coping mechanism after to deal with the UTCT blues.
Yes.
Yes. 100%. It's this like build up, it's happened, and then there's still something to look forward to when 100%. You're sitting at your desk on Monday and you're questioning why I have a job after UTCT.
Yeah.
Lucky. And your theatres have been cool. It's been so great to have this is like a cool storytelling session for me. It's like people's lives and running and there's times and stuff is serious, but it's also like community enjoying it. You've used the word fun a lot, which I don't think I've heard in a while. Like there's all the very serious chats and I'm like, guys and girls, at the end of the day, it should really be fun. We know where we're going to find the mountain men. You mentioned you're dabbling with the idea of Three Peaks, but are you going to be towing the start line of UTCT?
I hope so. I don't know. I've missed, it is like I said, it's my favorite event. I've missed the last 3 years. So 3 years ago, I crewed my brother and a friend. Decided I wanted to be on that side of the fence.
Lekker.
The year after that was the inaugural 100 miler. And I decided I want to actually take part in a actively supporting role. And I volunteered to run the last stretch of sweep the last stretch of the miler. So Alphen Trail to the finish, so a nice 6 a.m. start, and then you kind of death walk with the last guy to the finish. But it was amazing. It was awesome. That was epic. And then last year, I wanted to run the 100K. Was really well prepared for it. I felt like I was in a good space. And then I got really sick in the week leading up to it. I think the Saturday or the Sunday evening, I went to bed with a scratchy throat where you know it's going to turn into something worse. And then you kind of bargain with yourself and you're like, no, I'll be fine.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And then by the Thursday, I knew that I felt okay symptom-wise, but it would have been an irresponsible and stupid thing to actually run the race. So it was very hard to have to do a DNS, but I had to. But I realized on the Saturday morning, just hiking up to Kloof Corner, being out of breath, I would have done some damage and I wouldn't have made it past the first aid station probably the day. So it was the right thing to do. So yeah, this year I really want to go back, but I've missed 3 weeks and counting worth of training now due to due to having my appendix removed. So we'll see. I mean, time is running out. But I would, it's call it a 50-50 at the moment. But I feel like I haven't done anything difficult in quite a while.
Okay.
So that bothers me. I haven't run 100Ks in a long time.
So maybe the 6-6 convinces you that you're in good enough shape to get you to that start
line. We'll use that as a barometer.
Lekker.
Because unfortunately there's a big difference between being road fit and fast and being climbing fit.
Yeah.
And 100K fit. But we'll see. Yeah. But for now, we'll see how things go at 66. And then,
nice.
Yeah, see how it pans out.
Last question to round us out before I let you go is, what hobby do you have outside of running that maybe people don't know about that you can share with us? Or even if they do, that's cool. But something that gets you as stoked, but it's not pounding the
Can't call being a parent a hobby because it's a full-time job. two things I like to do with my spare time when I have it is play Xbox games. So I enjoy getting immersed in that. Specific types of games, but yeah, I can easily spend quite a lot of time, and I've managed to turn Charlie, our 5-year-old, into quite a gamer herself. We obviously don't let her play things like GTA and Doom yet. But I think gaming is a good and a healthy pastime. And then I love building Lego. I grew up playing and building Lego, and then kind of got back into the hobby the year that Charlie was born. So in 2019 I bought my first Lego set in many, many years. I kind of bought myself as a 50% me, 50% wife and Charlie present, and then kind of gradually got back into it. On a Lego collection, but that's also quite an expensive hobby. It's not there. But it's a lot of fun. It's something that Charlie enjoys as well. So she's got a bunch of sets, and it's something that's quite a lot of fun to do with her.
Yeah, that's epic.
And then my wife also quite enjoys building Lego. I think it's a very good...
Yeah, I'm like, what a wholesome family pastime. Yeah.
Awesome. It's normally not all of us doing it at the same time. We go through phases, but it's definitely something I do enjoy doing with Charlie.
I can imagine you and Charlie, like competition, like who's assembling this the best. Oh, it's epic.
Oh, yeah. It's very difficult for me with my liking to follow rules and things need to be in its place.
And seeing she's how like, she this just, definitely goes here, jams it in.
Oh, she just. It mixes everything in together, but it's fine. It's whatever. That's the way we played when we were younger as well.
It's awesome.
Good. But yeah, that's a one I'd say a hobby I spend significant time on outside of running.
That's so cool. Beatrice, thanks for the stories, the nuggets of wisdom that came through, for reminding us that trail running is fun. I hope to see Skelly do another lap. That's going to be epic. I'll look out for that.
Shame. Skelly is missing most of his limbs. No, he's somewhere, but he's missing most of his limbs. So we'll need to do some reconstructive surgery probably. Some surgery.
You said you've got like a surgeon in your group.
We have a neurologist in the group. I mean, if you can work on a brain, I think you can work on an arm and a leg. Yes, it should be fine.
Surely. Okay, so we put Skelly back together. And then 6-6 we'll look out for. And then for those of you who want to actually see literally the mountain men in full force. Kloof Corner, UTCT, last weekend in November.
Yeah, I think it's the 23rd, 24th, second 24th. Last,
Friday night, they do the drill, waiting for the miler athletes to go up Kloof Corner, and then Saturday morning again, the 100K. So there's two Kloof Corner opportunities, join there. I've done it, and since I've done it for the first time, I haven't missed it because it is just the best. But yeah, thanks for your time, Petrus, and sharing some stories with us.
Thank you. It was fun.